Welcome to Hollywood and Horsepower, the show about the story behind the story. I'm your host, Mark Otto, and this week we are joined by a very special guest, Hall of Fame jockey, Mike Smith. One of the things we wanted to kick off before we bring Mike in is we have a couple new partners, and we don't do this very often on this show. There's very few things we actually endorse, but there are a couple of things that are near and dear to me, and you know, I feel really strongly that these are good organizations. The first one I want to talk about for a second is No Fallen Heroes Foundation. You can find them at nofallenheroesfoundation.org. This is a group that was started by a former Top Gun pilot, fellow Navy aviator. As you know, that's where the Hollywood come from in this show. And it is a really, really good organization that helps both vets, first responders, and even their families. So please take a moment, look them up, learn a little bit about them, and if you can do anything, please do. It's a great group. They are very focused on helping people, and as I say, there's very few people we get behind on this organization. So nofallenheroesfoundation.org. And then the other one is Old Friends Equine. So on the animal side, we support Old Friends, and on the human side, we support No Fallen. So once again, welcome to Hollywood and Horsepower. This week, we are joined by a very special guest, Hall of Fame jockey, Mike Smith. Mike has a career that's unmatched by almost anyone, and most of you probably know most of his highlights. What we're going to talk about today is a little bit about how he got there. So, Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Mark. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you joining us. It's an honor. So, you know, as you look through your, you know, history, it's a novel of wins. I mean, you've got, you know, just a laundry list of Kentucky Derby, Breeders' Cup, Grade 1, and it goes on and on and on. They're all really amazing. We could talk for 3 hours about that. What I'd really like to do, and we can build up to that, but I'd like to go back and kind of learn about Mike. You know, what was it like? At what age did you get an interest in riding? How old were you when it caught?
Actually, at a very young age. You know, I was born and raised in New Mexico, a little town outside of Roswell called Dexter. Born in Roswell, lived in Dexter, went to school there, and like any young kid, man, I was into sports and. I really wanted to be a linebacker, to be honest with you. I just never grew, man. I stayed
did
small.
Did you play football at a young age?
Yeah, I played baseball, football. I mean, I played all the major sports, you know. Just never was quite good or big enough. Basketball, I certainly wasn't tall enough. And in football, I wasn't big enough. But I was always around horses. You know, my grandparents on both ends of my family were involved with horses somewhat. My father actually rode for a little bit before I was born. Had an uncle at the time on my mother's side, my mother's brother, that was breaking babies and he had a farm and starting quarter horses off and thoroughbreds, sending them out to the track, you know. And I was pretty much raised on a horse and around a horse and could always ride. And I thought, man, maybe I could be a jockey. I remember watching Secretariat win the Derby and thinking, maybe that's what I could be. I ain't growing. Maybe I could compete, you know, and do something like that. And that's how it started. And I actually just started myself, said, okay, I'm going to start. And then, of course, my uncle saw that I was taking an interest to it. And next thing you know, he's helping me out, and I'm working for him. And the rest is history, man. I started riding match races at a very young age, which is, for those of you who doesn't know what a match race is, they're just kind of when one farmer thinks his horse is faster than the others, and they meet on a Sunday morning somewhere, and they race, and I'd be the one that was on one of the horses, you know, and that's kind of how it started.
And that was something that was really popular back in the day. I mean, when you read about that, there was a lot of match race. I don't know that happens so much anymore, but it was a big deal then. Now, you mentioned that you had an uncle and your father that rode. Did they ride, you know, like in the bigger leagues like you did, like Grade 1 races?
My father never made it that far. He always had a weight problem. But when he rode around, I think he started at Turf Paradise, I think, way back in the day. I might have rode a little bit in New Mexico, and then, you know, just got too heavy. But it was always around horses when he was alive. I mean, he always galloped and worked. He was at Philadelphia Park for many, many years. He worked for a lot of top trainers, you know, back then there at Philadelphia. And my uncle went on to train on his own for a little while. They had some success, you know, just didn't do great, but always did well. He was a great horseman, had more quarter horses than he would thoroughbreds, you know. And then went back to you know, breaking babies and getting the horses ready to go to the track. But he did okay for a while, but he's the one that got me started. His name was Thomas Wyatt. He's the one that got me going in 1982, and I took off from there and just never looked back.
Now, did you start out right on thoroughbreds, or did you start out on quarter horses?
Both. Mark, okay. I started out on both,
actually.
They were
both very popular at that time.
Yeah, but I was so light. I was really light at the time, and quarter horses carried more weight, actually. So thoroughbreds was always the way I wanted to go. And plus, I wanted to win the Kentucky Derby at a very young age, man. That was like every young jockey's dream, you know. I wasn't really in the quarter horses as much, although I did love them and I did appreciate them, and I loved, you know, watching the All-American and some of the big races in quarter horses, but the thoroughbreds were always my main interest.
Is that kind of the driver for any jockey? Like, if he's a quarter horse jockey, is it really the dream to ride thoroughbreds? Is that every jockey, kind of like, you know, in racing, every NASCAR driver wants to win the Daytona 500. Is it kind of the same thing? Kentucky Derby sets the bar?
I would have to say so, somewhat. I mean, there are some riders that just grew up around quarter horse racing, and that's all they wanted to do. But I would say, you know, of course, the Kentucky Derby is America's horse race, man. And I think that anyone that's involved in horses always dreams of being affiliated with a Kentucky Derby winner or having one or owning one or ridden one, whatever it may be. So I would think so, that thoroughbreds are always kind of the place you want to go.
So there was another Arizona guy that you're very well known for partnering with, was Bob Baffert. What age did you cross paths with? Did you know him back then in Arizona?
No, I didn't know him in Arizona at all.
Okay.
When he first came, you know, after he won his first Breeders' Cup with Eddie Delahousie, I forget the name of the horse off the top of my head, but you know, that's when I kind of knew Bob. I knew he was in quarter horses, and he was just starting to get over to thoroughbreds. But see, I was back east, Mark, back then a lot.
That's what made me think of it when you mentioned quarter horses in Arizona. You know, I knew that was kind of his background too.
I went to New York in the late '80s, and I was based out of New York for many years until I came to California to be based out of here in 2001. I fly in occasionally and ride some stake races here, but I was, you know, mainly out of New York, and of course Florida in the winter and Kentucky in the spring, and then back into New York back then. And then once I came out to California in 2001, that's when I hooked up with Bob, and he started putting me on some horses, and we were very blessed together, man. We've had and hopefully still down the road have had a lot of success, and hopefully there's more to come.
Yeah, there's no question.
I mean,
we were
blessed to achieve the kind of the Holy Grail in horse racing, which is, of course, the Triple Crown in 2018 with Justify.
What was the very first big race that you rode?
That I rode in?
Yeah, like where did you, what was the first big race that you can remember?
I would have to say my first major stake race was a horse called 36 Red. I'd won the Gotham on him. He went on to win the Wood Memorial. He ran in the Derby, didn't run very well. He set the pace and tired, but he actually ran second in the Belmont. He was a real nice horse for Nick Zito, and that was kind of Nick Zito's first big horse too at the time. But I would say he was my first, you know, major stake horse.
So you're kind of coming up through the ranks. You go to New York. That had to be an exciting time too, to go from Arizona, Turf Paradise, to New York City, running Belmont, I assume, and Aqueduct.
Well, you know, going back to the beginning, I didn't start in Arizona. My father did. I actually started in New Mexico. So I started in Santa Fe, went into the State Fair at Albuquerque, then into El Paso, and then of course into the Midwest quite a bit, and then on into New York. But, yeah, I mean, you always dream of going, look, I mean, when you're a young rider, especially in the thoroughbreds anyway, you always dream of either make it in California or New York. I mean, one or the other. So whichever you're blessed to land at and do well at, of course, you're pretty excited. Because at the time, those are the two A-plus racetracks.
So, like, for the people that are just joining us, I'm with, you know, Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, and we're talking about the beginning of his career. You know, for a young jockey who's coming up and, you know, you're just starting to get recognized, how does that take place? Is it a trainer that spots you somewhere? Is it an owner that requests you? How do you get the call to go to New York?
Well, as you mature and as you grow as a rider and as you develop into a better and better rider, the game just takes you places. At least that's what it did for me. I'm not too sure I ever picked a place that it just seemed to take me to that next step, whatever that meet may be, rather be in Oaklawn Park or Nebraska early on in the days, into Chicago from Kentucky. Kentucky led me into New York. You know, you just kind of follow connections move on, they go to places, and the game just kind of takes you where it wants to take you, and the better you're doing, the more you become recognized,
and the more
people see you. Well, of course, that's going to gravitate you towards the bigger trainers, bigger owners, and that's going to pull you into more A racetracks. You know, rather that be, you know, New York, California, Florida, Kentucky, you know, there's a multitude of great tracks. You know, that the game will take you to, but that's kind of what happened to me. I just kind of followed wherever the good Lord pointed me, you know. It just seemed like the next thing you know, I'm winding up in here, winding up there, winding up in Churchill. Next thing you know, I'm in New York. And they were trying to pull me out of New York and come back to Kentucky for another year, then go back into New York. But I was doing so well while I was there in 89. I said, well, why even leave? They said, well, all the guys are going to come back from the winter meet in Florida, and it's going to get really tough. I said, well, that's what I want. The tougher, the better, man. That's how you learn, right? And so I stayed.
So that brings up a really good point. How did you learn? Was it from watching other jockeys? Would you just pick up things that you saw other people do? Or was like your uncle coaching you, or a combination of things?
Well, in the beginning, I mean, he taught me the basics, you know, on how to start and everything. And then, I mean, you have all the basics down, you know, you have the basic ideas down, but then you learn actually how to ride a race, and different styles and different things that work just by watching, by trial and error and watching. And I've always been a sponge, man. I mean, everything I see, it seems to stick, man. It just seems to, you know, whether you're watching good or bad, whatever it is, I knew what to do, what not to do just by watching. And you know, I'm being blessed to love the game so much, and to ask questions, and to, you know, I had great mentors, you know, all these top riders, you know, they were good guys, although they seemed mean and grumpy, you know, at the time. If you'd actually go up and ask for help, they were more than happy to give you some pointers or some lessons, you know, as long as, you know, they had the time for it. And a great mentor to me early on in my life and my career was Pat Day. He really kind of took me under his wing early on, and I learned so much from him on and off the racetrack, you know. So
and
he was
trying to
help
Pat
a lot
as well, and it's interesting. Pat made the comment one time that when he started winning races was when he started listening to the horse, telling him, you know, when they were ready and stuff like that. You know, he kind of, obviously there's a lot more to it than just that, but did you kind of find the same thing to be true? Was there a lot of it, you know, between you and the horse?
I find it even more so now than ever. You know, I've always been, like I said, I was raised on a horse. Matter of fact, I rode a horse to school sometimes. I just always had a knack for just to communicate with them. I don't know, that to me, I just understand what they like and don't like and what they want and don't want. It just always kind of, I don't know, somewhat been there for me. And that's been a big part of what my success is that I'm able to really, you know, get along and communicate with the horse without having to do a whole lot, you know, more finesse, you know, so to say, than strength, you know. And I understand exactly what Pat was saying and what he meant by that. But yeah, that's a lot of my who I am as well. And a lot of that could have been, you know, coming through him, too, as being my mentor, you know.
Yeah, that would make sense. Who were some of the other jockeys that you looked up to, like some of the big
names? Man, in New York, of course, Angel, Jacinto Vasquez, Georgie, Daly, Santos. Man, there was so many great, great riders in New York. And then as I came out to California, you know, Gary Stevens was a great friend of mine early on, and me, we're like brothers, we're like family. And getting to watch Lafitte and Eddie and Chris McCarron, man, and Shoemaker, all the great, great riders are out here. You know, I came up in an era before those guys all retired, where I was blessed to have been around all of them. And I think that era back in that day with Shoe and Feed and Angel and those guys, Chris and Eddie, and I don't know if that generation will ever be topped. And they were just incredible, man. Rider, and not just in New York and California, all over the country, you know, in the Midwest, with John Livey and Snyder. Yeah, I mean, you just had so many great riders everywhere. And I was just a young kid coming up. And
every generation thinks that, because the younger jockeys have to look at you and Gary and feel the same way.
Well, I would have, you know, somewhat. I mean, if they weren't blessed to have been around those other guys, you know, of course,
yeah,
you know, that's all they know is
young guys.
But believe me, if they'd have met those guys, if they'd have met them other guys, they'd have been really impressed, man. Those guys were just incredible, man. They really were.
Get to ride a race with Shoemaker?
Oh yeah, quite a bit.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I got to ride with just about all the greats. The guys that I wish I would have got a chance to ride with that retired before I started was like Arcaro and Johnny Longan and some of those guys. I would have loved to, Johnny Ross and some of those guys. I would have loved the opportunity to ride with some of those guys, but they had retired by the time I came around. But I got to catch that generation that I was telling you about right after them. That was, to me, will always be probably from what I've been blessed to have been around and what I've seen, the greatest generation of riders that I think there is or ever was. They were just incredible.
Yeah,
I got to learn from them and see it. You know, I mean, it was kind of like some people, I guess, would say, you know, in the era of Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic, and you know, it was kind of that era, and I was just a young apprentice who just come around and got to watch and learn from them guys.
I can see that, but I think there's a lot of people who probably feel the same way about you, you know, and about like Gary and, you know, a lot of
people. I would hope so. Those guys were there for me, and when I, and now that I've been blessed to reach somewhat what you'd call the pinnacle of this sport, well, then you got to stop and turn around and help the next guy behind you, you know. So I would hope that they'd look up to me, and I hope that I've left my, that I've conducted myself in a manner
that, like, you know, Drayden Van Dyke, I know that you and Gary have both kind of mentored him along the way, and I know that he looks up to you guys.
Well, we try. I'm there. If anyone has any questions or if I can help in any way, I'm always willing to help, you know.
So you're going along. When did you get the call, or when did you get the opportunity for the first Kentucky Derby? I know you've rode many.
Well, I was a bit spoiled. I rode my first Derby in 1984. I think I was just turning 17 or 18 years old at the time. For Shug McGahey, who I was blessed to have come up around early on in my career as well and ride for. And he actually had the favorite in the race. He had another horse in the race. We had an entry called Van Lanningham was the other horse that Pat was on. And that was the year that Lafitte won it on Swell.
Oh,
that
wow.
Was that was my first Derby. I think at the time I was riding. I had rode Pine Circle in Chicago in the winter, and at the time when the Derby came around, I was in Omaha, Nebraska riding, and she called up and asked if I would be interested in coming to ride for the Derby. I said, you gotta be kidding me. I couldn't believe it. Matter of fact, it was the first time first or second time I'd ever been on a plane with a fly to ride the Kentucky Derby in 1984.
And then it had to be almost surreal to be walking in to Churchill Downs and looking up at the Twin Spires and knowing that you're part of history.
He was pretty incredible. I was just at awe and everything. Everything just seems kind of a blur to me because I was in so much awe of everything. Luckily I remember to ride the race. I mean, I was just a young kid. I remember
and that
I got
kind
to ride
of brings
back
you to that too. As a race, that has to be a pretty intimidating race. You know, you figure the average field is what? What would you say, 6 or 7 horses? And now you go to a 20-horse field.
Yeah, it's pretty intimidating. People can say, "Well, it's just another race." You know, you got to ride it like it's just another race. That wasn't true, and hasn't been true ever since I've ever ridden Derby. It's a different race. It feels different. It is different, and it means so much more than
lot,
any,
there also
than
has
any
to
other
be a lot
race.
Of strategy when you're talking about that many horses all trying to get into position.
It's important, you know. Position's very important. You know, you got to really, really watch what's going on in front of you because horses come back at you so fast. You know, they stop so quick for some odd reason in the Derby, and you've got to put yourself in a place and follow the right horses. Otherwise, you wind up having to check behind them, and once you do that, you're pretty much out of the race. You know, so position early on, getting your horse into a really happy, comfortable rhythm, and having a getting a trip. You know, getting the trip is a very important part of the winning the Derby as well.
How much of that is the jockey, and how much of that is the horse? Do you trust him at all to guide you through the crowd, or are you kind of the eyes putting him where he should be going?
Well, again, you know, having a horse that's capable of doing all that quick enough, early enough, and handy enough to put in places and to place them is a plus. It makes your job a whole lot easier. If your horse is just one-dimensional, one style, well, then, you know, that takes away a lot of other options. You know, if he's just a dead closer, well, then he is what he is. You just got to hope for a good trip or hope you don't have to go too wide, you know. But if he's a horse that's very tactical, well, then, you know, that's a plus, man. That's a feather in your cap.
They'll actually fight for it.
Yeah, I mean, you
and
know,
you
they'll
can
put
see
you
that.
The
you
right
see
kind
that a
of
lot
place.
With him.
With who's that? What's that?
There's no more clear story of that than Songbird.
Oh, well, she was very forward. I mean, she was just an amazing filly, man. I mean, she left the gate. If she didn't leave there in front, it wasn't but a jump or two afterwards, she would be. And if someone wanted to go really, really quick, she was fine with getting just off of them. So when you have a horse like that, they make your job a whole lot easier.
So you get to your first Derby, and I know we're jumping around here a little bit, but I mean, I'm curious, of every place you've been in the world, what's your favorite track or race to run? And I know, you know, obviously you say the Kentucky Derby is a must win, but all that aside, what's the most amazing place that this has taken you?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, when you're on the East Coast, the greatest place to race is upstate New York and Saratoga. You know, when you're out here in California, you know, Santa Anita and Del Mar are amazing. When you're in Kentucky, you love to be in Kingland and get the opportunity to ride the Derby at Churchill. So those are all just the obvious.
Well, they all have a special.
But there's some cool little racetracks around this country, around this world, like Oaklawn Park, for example, that are just hidden gems, man. They're just amazing racetracks to be at and ride at. So there's quite a few places that I really like. But of course, you also like every track that you're winning at. So if you go into, I don't care where it's at, you know, you can go into the coldest place that there is, and if you win, man, that's the greatest place ever.
So, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this up, but you know, you also, you know, and this is a little bit further down the road, so you get your first Derby, and I guess I'm going to stop myself. I'm not going to jump there yet, but you get your first Derby. Where did you go from there? What was the next big thing after that? You know, you've got that under your belt now. What do you aim for?
Yeah, I won the Derby in 05 for John Sheriff and Mr. Moss over at Giacomo. But that actually was a slow year for me, other than having him and getting the opportunity to ride him and win the Derby. You know, after that, instead of heading back to California like I should have, I for some odd reason, chose to stay there at Churchill and then go into New York a little while. So things kind of slowed down for me a little bit. Although I did okay at Churchill and went into New York and just did okay. It was really cold at the time. And then, you know, I should have came straight back to California and just followed John right back here. I think things would have took off a whole lot better for the rest of that year. But it slowed way down, and then it wasn't until the end of 2005 when I came back to California to start riding for John and everything, and things took right back off again.
Well, and, you know, you come off that, and it wasn't long after that, and you match up with Zenyatta.
Yeah, and before her, there was a few others, you know, before her, actually, with John and Mr. Moss that we were fortunate to have. And then along comes, I've always been blessed to have ridden some really, really good mares, you know, filly mares. And every time I thought, well, you know, y'all never ride another one as good as this one, or this one would come along, and you'll never ride another one as good as that one, or that one would come along, or I'll never have another one of those. And here comes Zenyatta. And you know, before her, it was Azari, you know, and before Azari, I think it was Inside Information. And there was so many more big mares after Zenyatta. But when she came along, we knew right away that she was just different. She was special. There was just something about her that, it wasn't just her size, how big and beautiful she was, and how talented she was. It was just everything about her. She was like the ultimate entertainer of the year every year she ran. I mean, she from her paddock antics, you know, where she would, you know, stomp the ground and just stand tall and above all the rest of them. Of course, her style of running, coming from dead last every time, and just nailing them at the wire when she probably could have won by 10. She just loved to make it dramatic and close most of the time. And she was just something about her. If you never got a chance to see her, it's hard to explain. I wish everyone would have got a chance to see her one time.
If they didn't get a chance to see her, they owe it to themselves to go watch a YouTube video of a race or two.
Yeah.
She did put on a great
yeah,
show.
To this day,
it is interesting that you've had several, you touched on that, you've had several horses kind of like her that were just, you and them, I mean, from Game On Dude to, you know, Zenyatta to, you know, Royal Delta, you've had just these amazing horses that you guys become a team.
Yeah, and we go on these crazy win streaks, you know. I've been involved in quite a few of those, you know, and it's just pretty neat when you're blessed to be able to ride something as talented as they are, you know. It really is. And when you learn to just to listen to them and stay out of their way and let them be who they are and just make the right decisions as far as when it's time to go and if you're going too quick or not quick enough, those are just the pilot decisions that I make. But on a whole, man, it's all them, and you just learn to be a good pilot and point them in the right direction and keep them happy and get them into a happy, good rhythm early on in the race, and they'll always run for you. And that's what I've learned. And still do to this day, and it continues to work, you know.
So what was it like with Game On Dude? Because I know he was a good example, and he was, for anybody who knows me, knows it's my favorite horse of all time. And I can give you the backstory, but it's ironic. I wasn't involved in horse racing at the time that you were riding him, but I was working in California, and you would hear about him all the time, obviously, because you guys won. And so I started to watch him just because the name caught my attention. It was a unique name, and he's winning. And it just kind of became fun. Later, I become involved with old friends, and I was actually there the day that he came when, you know, Bob and Jill made it possible for him to go there. But what was it like, you know, like, because he didn't have the record that he did before you, and then when you and him paired up, it's just like you guys took off.
Well, we hit it off, you know. We were good friends, man. I knew what he liked. I knew how he wanted to run, and you know, and I would try to put him in that position, in that situation. And 9 times out of 10, I was able to do that, and he won for me about 9 times out of 10. I would have to say we had a pretty high batting average, man. Whenever I was riding him, it was. But he was such a straightforward, true, honest horse, you know, and got good at around the time I started riding him. And later on in his career, he got really good as he got older. And he was, you know, he was a gelding, but he was just a blue collared kind of guy, man, kind of horse. And
just took him a little while to find his groove.
Yeah, just took him a little while to find his groove and what really worked for him. And once we did, man, the rest is history. We went on to do a lot of good, you know, a whole lot more good than getting beat. I mean, we won, like I said, probably a good 80% of the time.
And he is so smart. I mean, even in retirement.
He ran as well. He was just amazing intelligence.
Yeah, it's a remarkable story, and I loved watching you guys. And I didn't even know you then. I didn't know anything about the sport to speak of. Not that I know anything today, but you know, I caught my eye, and it was just funny that it was like every time you'd see him, it felt like every time you guys went out, you won. And the other thing I noticed with him was it seemed almost effortless. Like, I've seen him go all the way around the track with his ears facing forward. And you didn't see another racehorse do that. He just seemed like he glided around the track.
Yeah, you know, he had a really high cruising speed, and you let him use it to his advantage. And control it at the same time. You know, he had stamina on top of it, so not only was he quick and had that high cruising speed, when he get into a really good rhythm and breathe right, man, he could carry that speed for a long ways, and horses would get tired trying to keep pace with him, you know. And he, you know, enclosures had to move early to try to get to him, and that would take away from their kick, and you know, it was a lethal weapon what he had once he figured out how to use it right, you know.
Could you tell when you would first get on a horse, you know, of these big name ones that became big name horses because you were with them, the combination of the two of you, could you tell, like, there's something special about this horse right from the first time you rode him?
Oh, yeah.
Or was it something where you had to work at it to kind of pull something
out? Well, I mean, they'll always show you they'll show you some potential at least. You might be some things you need to work with here and there depending on you know, on their age and how far along they are or how forward they are, or you know, there might be a few things that need to be worked out, but they show you that it's the balance they have, the way they move, the intelligence they have. Like Justify was a big, powerful, beautiful horse. Although he was lightly raced going into the Derby, he was extremely intelligent, man. I mean, they seem to have the whole package, man. The real good ones do, and then not only are they quick, they're really smart on top of it. You show them one time.
So did you feel it with him? He's a good example. Like Justify, you're at the Kentucky Derby, coming up to the Kentucky Derby. Did you kind of think this horse actually has a chance to go all the way?
Oh yeah, no, we knew before he. We knew early long. He came to the track already highly liked. So everything he did, it must have been above average from the time that they started with him. And that just goes to show you how great he was. You know, he went on to do everybody right and go on to win the Triple Crown. I mean, he was just that good. It was too bad we didn't see him run as an older horse, because I think he would have continued to do so. He was just dominant that year. You know, he retired, and the horses he beat, like Vino Rossio and all them horses, they went on to win the Breeders' Cup Classic and everything else. And he was beating them horses pretty handy at the time. So I would have loved to have seen him get that opportunity, but I think he's showing it now through his offspring as a sire. I mean, all his babies are just coming out just really, really runners, you know.
Yeah, and that is something interesting. You know, the other one that was kind of along that line that was one of yours was Arrogant. And
Arrogant's another one. Look at his offspring now.
Runners. Yeah, exactly.
I think it is kind of an interesting thing
for people just tuning in. I'm with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith and talking about his career and, you know, talking about horses that you wish you could see him run as older horses. That is kind of unique to the U.S. You know, I know I've worked with a lot of people from the U.K. and they run a lot of their horses to much older. They'll actually go and breed them and then take them back to the track, and that just doesn't seem to happen in the U.S.
No.
Or at least not often.
these young dirt horses, man, they're worth so much as a sire, and they get,
it's just,
you know, they syndicate them out, and it just, it doesn't make sense to even run them, because they're worth so much as a sire, most of these horses.
Yeah,
so,
if something were to happen, it would be catastrophic.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it's, for sure, first of all, it'd be a tragic, you know, loss anyway, but yeah, they're just worth so much money on top of it.
So who was your biggest surprise? Like, who was a horse that you got and didn't really, maybe you didn't, you know, you thought they were a good horse, but they turned out to be a great horse as time went on?
Probably Arrogate. I knew he was a good horse going in. I knew they thought a lot of him. Bob had talked a lot about him, but he was lightly raced when I rode him. You know, he'd only run like, you know, what, three or four times before he ran in the Travers. I mean, he was very lightly raced, and then for him to run the race he did in the Travers and broke the track record and still has the fastest mile and a quarter ever there and probably will for a long time, and then for him to go on that winning streak that he went on to becoming the richest horse in the world as far as purse earnings go was just incredible. So he was a horse that and his numbers, the numbers that he would run, how fast he would run, and the speed buyers that he would get were just off the charts, man. I mean, they just, I'd never seen a horse run as fast as he could at a mile and a quarter. It was just incredible, other than, of course, the great Secretariat, you know. But yeah, he was a big surprise on how talented he really was. You know, he was just incredible.
Yeah, he was an amazing. I mean, according to the records, I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it claims that he was $17 million. His earnings
is what he's made. That was his racing career. You know, he was probably worth a lot more than that.
That obviously doesn't even factor in his breeding.
Exactly.
But that was so, you know, that kind of brings up to, you know, his world is the, you know, World Cup winner, which obviously was a big chunk of that. You know, I've always been curious. Have you've ridden in the Dubai World Cup, right?
Yes, I won it with him.
How does that compare to the races here?
Well, I mean, it's a huge event, man. It's unbelievable. They're different. I mean, you know, state racing and racing in the Middle East or in Europe, they're all different. You know, they all have a little bit of a different feel to them. but when you're competing in the World Cup, it's equivalent. It's like running in the Classic, because you're going to have horses from all over the world, not just, you know, the Middle East or America in the Middle East. They're coming from everywhere. You know, Dubai World Cup attracts and the Saudi Cup now attracts horses from all over the world. So it's a lot like a Breeders' Cup Classic feel.
And it seems very, like, it just looks like a very top-run race. I mean, it's fun to watch.
Oh, it's to the nines, man. There's nothing.
Yeah, everything.
It's class from the bottom to the top, man. It's unbelievable.
So, you know, looking back on it, what was your favorite part of the career for you? As you look back, you know, you're very successful. You obviously have had many accomplishments. I mean, is it the first Kentucky Derby win or the Triple Crown? What was it that just stands out to you as the moment that you still pause and think about?
I would say when Breeders' Cup started and I was able to start, you know, my first Breeders' Cup was a great grass horse called Lure, and I went on to win back-to-back Breeders' Cup miles with him. Claiborne Farms owned him. And so Breeders' Cups, I've always held a special place for me. I don't know, I just seemed to come alive on that day for whatever reason, and I've been blessed to have been around the right people, right horses, and, you know, 27 wins later, man, here we still are and still trying to do it. So the Breeders' Cup will always be the special part of my career, and honestly, just getting the opportunity to ride just the horse, period. I truly love them, man. I truly
do. You still kind of get in awe of it today? Like, if
more so than ever,
the next big
more
horse,
so than ever. Yeah, without a doubt, you appreciate them a whole lot more as you get older.
How much does the trainer come into play? I know the trainer's a huge part of it. It's a bad question, but what I meant was, how much of it is like the combination? I mean, it just seems like and I don't know if it's personality or obviously he's one of the best in the world, but it seems like when you pair up with Bob, it's almost, you know, now's the time to go cash a ticket. You know, if Mike's on one of Bob's horses, more than likely you're going to do well that day. Everybody will. Is it the combination that you guys work a lot alike? Because in all fairness, there's a lot of guys have a lot of good horses, but there is something magical about you and Bob. I mean, it's like an unstoppable combination.
You know, a lot of times, you know, it just kind of works out for you and certain trainers, you know, where you just click together for some reason, and we've been blessed to have. And listen, now I'm very well mounted when he puts me on these. You know, Bob picks them out for me, and when he puts me on one, it's for a reason. Or he wants something specific done for him. And Bob's great at that. He knows what his horse is like, and he knows the kind of race that he wants him to run, and he knows the style that he wants him to run in, and so therefore that he'll pick that one out for me. He says, this is what I want. And it works, you know, and he trusts my judgment. If we got to go to plan B, he believes in me that I'm going to do the right thing and whatever that may be, because as you well know in horse racing, you know, you don't. Everything just doesn't go right from the word go. I mean, sometimes you gotta adjust and make decisions, and he trusts in my decision making, and I certainly trust in his training, man. And you, I'm confident going in that they're ready, they're sound, they're ready to perform to the best of their ability, and they're fit, and I can do all the things I need to do to win this, regardless of where we're at in the race or how we left there. For example, Arrogate supposed to be close to the lead, if not on the lead, and next thing you know, we get eliminated leaving the gate, and you think we got no chance at all, and here we come. You know, I mean, he had the horse ready, and I was able to do the things that I needed to do to get him back into the race and still perform to, if not even better than you would have thought. So we've done very well together, and hopefully we'll come across another one. It'll put us back
I'm
in the
sure you will. I mean, there is something. He has a knack to be able to spot a young horse. And, I mean, obviously it's not 100% for anybody, but there is. He's got the eye where he can see something in them, how they walk something. But it is amazing to me how many he picks. You know, when you think about how many horses come up as two-year-olds, and to be able to look at these young horses and say, yeah, that's the one I want to focus on. It's pretty amazing.
He's got a good team with him too. You know, when they go to these sales, man,
excellent.
He's got his guys that are with him that plus touch agents, and then they've got them picked out, and they seem to have it down to a science, man. When they pick them out, man, they 80% of the time it's going to be a runner.
Yeah, it's going to be a good horse. But he does have a really good eye. I mean, he is an excellent horseman. You know, it's funny you talk about. You know, we talked about aftercare and stuff, and I've been involved with old friends and helped out where I could. And, you know, when you see the horses at the end of the career, and it's amazing how much you learn about trainers based on how they look at the end.
When
and I
done,
have to
yeah,
say,
they look pretty
first-hand
good,
experience, Bob's horses, they look amazing. I mean, Game On Dude came off the truck looking like he could still go back to the track. Silver Charm comes off the truck looking like he could go back to the track. And that says a lot. To me, it says a lot about the training. Because you could see, conversely, you've seen horses that haven't done so well when they were young, and they're paying the price when they get older. And I'm not talking politics or anything else. I'm just saying I think he's a really good horseman with a really good eye, and you can definitely see it in his horses and the combination that you guys have put together.
You know, without a doubt, and the ones that go to the breeding shed and go on to become great sires. I mean, they come off the track and they're in great health and great shape, and it carries over. You know, you can see it, like you said.
So brings up full circle. What does Mike do when he's not on the track? What are your hobbies? What do you like doing when you're not hanging around the track, which probably isn't very much.
You know, I'm a gym rat, man. I'm in the gym, you know, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, and I have personal trainers I work out with, and I train from about 10 to 12 5 days a week, and then after that, you know, me and my wife will go to a nice little lunch and do a little shopping, and that's probably pretty much it. But I'm in the gym. If I'm not on a horse, 9 times out of 10, you'll find me in the gym.
And that probably has to be a necessity for what you do as well. I mean, when you stop, for people
well,
that don't know,
me.
And if
I'm not sure all a lot of other riders. I don't know what their routine is. I don't get into that. I just know what I do and what it does for me, first and foremost, and how it's kept me at the age of 58 still competing at this level. It's because of that. I truly believe that. You know, if you take care of yourself right and you work out and you train and keep yourself in great health and great shape, man, age is just a number. You know, the horse has to do all the running. I don't. As long as I stay fit enough to stay on him.
But there is something to be said for the fitness because, I mean, when you think about it, you know, we're with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith talking about his career. And, you know, when you think about it, you're balancing on the end of your toes on aluminum stirrups, you know, probably trying to hold yourself together a little bit with your knees. It's a lot of muscle control to be able to do that in an animal that's running 35, 40 miles an hour around the track through dirt.
No, it certainly is, you know, and as you get older, you know, those are the first things that go on you is your legs, you know. So if you can keep your legs in great shape, man, you can go a long way.
That's the toughest part of being a jockey is keeping your joints and legs, I would imagine.
Yeah, your legs and hips, you know. I mean, if you can keep your legs, man, you're in good shape. You can go for a while because, you know, we're not doing the running, but there is a lot to the, you know, the balance and being in that position. And so if you can keep your legs and keep yourself where you can stay steady and firm on a horse, so then you're fine.
So what's next for you? We're obviously you're racing, but I mean, what's the next goal? Like, what are you focusing on?
You know, every race I ride, man, just riding the best I possibly can. And then that takes you to the other places, doesn't it? I mean, I could sit here and think about the Derby. But, well, that's, you know, that's another 6-7 months, you know, 5 months down the road, man. I got to do the everyday stuff to get me there. So it's the everyday stuff, what I have on my plate on that day to be the best I can on that day. And that's all I really try to do. Of course, you know, I mean, you dream of winning all these other races, but you can't get there unless you're doing the everyday stuff right. You know, you got to do all the little
things. You know, there's a common thread in that because, you know, I've talked to everybody from athletes to musicians to, you know, guys like you, jockeys and horse trainers. And, you know, one of the things that I find that's a common thread, you know, I think, you know, Bon Jovi commented about this. Somebody said to him, you know, what's your favorite? Do you like playing a large stadium, small stadium? He said, you know, I just want to be the best I can be every time I go out there. I don't care if it's for 50 people or 50,000. And I see that in anybody who's really successful is just what you just said. You know, I just want to focus on what I'm doing, be the best at what I can be, and just keep moving forward.
Greenborn Farms has that motto they run by, do the usual and usually will.
Yes.
And there's a lot to that, man. I mean, it's just doing all the little things right. And you do all the little things right, and that's going to lead you to the big thing.
Yeah, and they start out right as like how you clean the stall. There's the Claiborne way, and they refer to that a lot with the guys like on the farm, the Claiborne way. And it is just what you said, you know, if you do the little things right.
Yeah, exactly right, man. It takes, and that's how you get back on track when you've been there and you're going a bit of a slump. It's just start doing all the little things right again, and then it gets you right back on track, you know.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you joining us today, Mike. I can't thank you enough. I mean, you've had an amazing career.
Well, thank you, Mark.
You know, you're just an absolute gentleman and a pleasure to talk to, and I appreciate you being on with us.
Well, it was nice talking to you, man. And anytime, reach out to me. Like I said, if I'm not on a horse, I'm in the gym. If I'm not in the gym, I'm usually home, buddy.
I really appreciate it. If there's anything you ever want to promote, you reach out to us, and we'll be more than happy to help you with it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, man. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
All right. Good health and all the best, buddy.
Same to you. God bless.
That was Mike Smith, Hall of Fame jockey, just an amazing guy. We appreciate him taking the time to join us today here on Hollywood and Horsepower. We want to wrap up the show by giving another shout-out to another group that we support, which is Old Friends. oldfriendsequine.org, founded by Michael Blowen and run by countless others at this point of the game, is the poster child for aftercare and horse racing. So I'd encourage anybody, take a moment, check out their website. If you're anywhere near Lexington, Kentucky, Georgetown's where they're at, you know, go by the farm. They have tours every day. It's the closest you'll come to a Kentucky Derby winner. Several of the horses that Mike rode are at that farm, and you can, you know, get up and close and personal to them. They do a terrific job, as Michael says every day. What they do is let a horse be a horse. And again, we want to give a special shout out to our, you know, charity, which is No Fallen Heroes. We really can't ask you enough to go take a moment, check them out, nofallenheroesfoundation.org. They will be up on our page at BBS Radio, you know, within a day or so. But this is an organization that helps everybody from first responders to vets. It was founded by a vet who's a Top Gun pilot, Matt Wiz Buckley. They do an amazing job, and we just can't thank you enough for taking a moment, checking them out, and, you know, donate if you can, get involved any way you can. Well, this is another show we're going to wrap up. This is Hollywood and Horsepower. If you're anywhere near Miami, check out the Palm Restaurant. It's our favorite. Or, you know, Morgano's in Fort Lauderdale. If you're in Kentucky, try Tony's Steak and Seafood. And if you're in New York, go to King Umberto's. We thank you for joining us, and we will be back here again next week at Hollywood and Horsepower. Have a great week, everybody.